Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to American Muslim Project. I'm Asad Butt. American Muslim Project is a podcast where we share the contributions Muslims are making to American life. In each episode, we elevate unique Muslim voices that are shaping this American experience. My guest today is chef and media personality Saba Waheed Duffy. Since she was a teen, Saba has had a passion for cooking, but it wasn't until after she graduated from college that she pursued a career as a chef. And since then, she has traveled the world trying to find the next best thing when it comes to creating or enjoying food. Currently, she works as the resident chef and appliance educator at Yale Appliance in Boston, Massachusetts. In May of 2021, Saba became a Chopped champion. For those of you that are non-foodies like me, that means she took part in one Food Network's special cooking competition show hosted by Martha Stewart called Chopped. My first question, of course, was wanting to know what it was like to be around and work with Martha Stewart.
That's actually everybody's first question, yeah, which is hilarious. She gets a lot of negative press, which I think is quite unfair because she's still successful with what she has done. Obviously, she did commit a crime. She paid the time, she did the time, and she's still come out on top. And she is good at what she does. She's a lifestyle expert. She knows her food, and she's very professional and composed. And I liked being in her presence. I thought it was huge validation for me, kind of working in the food world and finally, getting this opportunity to meet Martha Stewart and have her taste and judge my food. That was definitely a once in a lifetime experience. And I thought she was fantastic. She's a little older, she's almost 80. So,
no clue. Wow.
Yeah. A lot of that, again, something everyone is surprised to hear right. As well. But, when you're a little older, you're not as zesty and as enthusiastic and, as spirited. So, yeah, she wasn't, super bubbly, but that's, I think, just her personality type anyways.
Yeah. I mean, she was hovering over you while you were preparing and cooking. What was that like?
And it was specifically when I was breaking down this piece of flounder, which was particularly difficult. And I was nervous, but you're also taking into consideration that you are on, there's like 10 cameras you. So I couldn't look like I was nervous. I mean, the producers probably would have enjoyed if I was like sweating a little bit more under the pressure, but I kept my cool and I kept calm and I just wanted to get the task done and impress her as well. Like if she's watching me break down this fish that I'm clearly having trouble doing, I didn't want her to notice too much about the struggles I was having. So yeah. I just tried to sugarcoat it with some light conversation.
You were going up against three men. What was that like?
So I have to say, when I met everyone, I was quite intimidated because they were all either restaurant chefs or had restaurant experience or worked in Michelin star
Oh man.
dining,
Yeah.
facilities, which is a whole different world from what I do. And I was intimidated just by hearing the resume. Now that doesn't have anything really to do with your skill. I mean, yes, of course, it has a lot to do with your skill, but also, just because I didn't work with Thomas Kellerup per se, or Lydia Bastianich at Lupo, or have my own restaurant, it didn't mean I couldn't keep up with them either. So, and clearly I proved myself because I could and I did. So it
Yeah.
was definitely intimidating to begin with, though.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that your husband actually helped you prepare by just giving you guys would if he would give you some mystery ingredients and put the clock on and then you'd have to prepare something. Is that right?
Yes. So as soon as we found out that I was going to be on the show, he wanted to train me. He started watching Chopped every night. We, would go on demand and watch every episode, and then he would, on his way home from work, would pick up four or five random ingredients and bring them home, and he would time me, and it was quite dramatic because I was so not nervous, but I was. It was frustrating because I was trying to work in the kitchen, and I still had my baby there, and our
Oh
kitchen is just under construction, and there was a lot of cursing and a lot of unpleasantries happening. And but it's so funny because it was proper training. Like I feel like when people are like when their head is in the game and you're really like trying to do your best, I feel like that's a form of expression, right? Like you're frustrated, but you want to do a
Sure.
good job. And he was on it. He cracked the whip, and he trained me. And it was, and he's not a foodie, by the way, at all. Like
Oh, interesting.
he's not. He's a proper meat and potatoes kind of guy. He just
He's
loves
Irish, right? That's where.
he is Irish, exactly. And he would, he would, after watching several episodes of Chopped, he would start to critique my plating, and I would just kind of laugh and say, "Babe, you eat burgers and shepherd's pie, and now you're critiquing these dishes." But I appreciated it because he was right. He was right. I mean, with his little knowledge of the culinary arts, he did have some good, decent feedback, and it was endearing, and I appreciated it. And him and my sister as well. My sister helped a lot. And
Amazing.
so, when he didn't know what certain ingredients were, she would point him in the right direction.
Yeah,
So,
that's great. Yeah.
yeah.
So you're Pakistani like me,
Yes.
and your husband's Irish. What's the crossover in terms of what kind of cuisine is Pakistani Irish these days? Have you experimented with anything?
Really a crossover because he is very, I would say like he's a purist when it comes to just classic, I guess Irish or American food. He just likes his classic flavors, but he's not one to turn away from some desi food. He does like gourmas, and he's eaten at my family's house many times, although God rest her soul, when my grandmother was still alive, she would humor her by trying some of her like mutton
Oh,
dishes,
sure.
and he still remembers the first time he tried it, and it was definitely the last.
Spicy? Too spicy? Is that or
It was a little spicy, and it just didn't agree with him, and
yeah.
yeah, he still remembers it to this day, but he
Yeah.
still enjoys the other Desi food,
Nice.
the light, mild, spiced
Yeah.
stuff.
He sounds
Yeah.
like me, even though I am Pakistani, my palate is much like his and very basic, and my wife makes fun of me because of it, as does my family as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you like what you like. I mean,
Yeah.
it's that's how it is. And I when we first started dating, I wanted him to be more adventurous with food because that's what I do, and I love trying new things, but I realized like pushing that kind of stuff wasn't it wasn't fair on him because he knew what he liked,
Yeah.
and he didn't want to be put in that position. That was, it was very awkward. And then I learned very quickly, like, don't push it because this is just how
Yeah,
it
agreed.
is. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your cooking style and you know, what are your signature dishes and how would you describe them to people?
Absolutely. So it took me a while to figure out my cooking style because I first got interested in cooking at a young age. I only grew up with Pakistani food, and I'd always been fascinated with other cuisines. And not to say we didn't go out for food, you know, but having that food at home wasn't easy. You know, my mom never really knew how to make anything else. So that was what sparked my interest, and I wanted to learn how to make other types of cuisine. So I kind of went down this Mediterranean Italian road and, you know, started to make these types of dishes at home. And that's what kickstarted my interest in cooking, was interest in Mediterranean style of food. And it also has a lot to do with trying to eat healthier. I was, you know, extremely overweight as a young kid because pack on the carbs and the sugar, and there was no real diet. It was just kind of, we ate everything. So I learned in high school basically that, you know, Mediterranean style diet was a lot healthier and a lot lighter. So that's what really drew me to that style of cooking. And it's just been an evolution ever since that. And I've always tried to keep things light and healthy, but I've also honored ingredients from, you know, our culture and heritage. I love the spices. I love the flavor profiles, but I'm not very good at authentic Pakistani food. That's never been my forte, but I know how to use those ingredients and I know how to
That's
make
great.
food taste good. So I've created my own unique cuisine.
Nice. And what are the types of ingredients that would you say is in your kind of unique cuisine or that you use a lot?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I love spices. I love chilies, like obviously coriander, cumin, cardamom, chili powder, chili flakes, saffron, turmeric. Those are kind of my standard medley of spices, but not limited to either. And various different types of vegetables and aromatics, tamarind and gosh, even flavors from the Middle East. After having lived in Dubai for 4 years, I really was exposed to a lot of great ingredients from that part of the world. So I also started incorporating things like za'atar and sumac and tahini into my style of cooking. So it's kind of just global influences, really, with a Mediterranean root.
For sure, yeah. I feel like friends of mine always ask me what Pakistani food is like, and you know, the immediate answer that I always give them is like it's just like Indian food. Is that the case? You know, is that a right answer that I'm giving people, or talk to people what the differences are?
So yes and no. I would have to say, like, Indian food ranges greatly from north to south. So if we were to draw a, you know, some sort of connection, it would be northern Indian and Pakistani food is very similar. But the South Indian is very different. It's very like coconut based and very light, I would say vegetarian based. And that's another point, actually, is that a lot of Indian food is sort of vegetarian based because of obviously of, you know, obvious reasons, like Hindu religion is mostly vegetarian. And also, I always say that the best way to determine like Pakistani food versus Indian is most Pakistani food has beef. The cow is sacred in India, so they don't consume beef there. So that's a good way to kind of determine Indian food from Pakistani. Pakistani is very meat heavy. A lot of kebabs, a lot of like grilled meats, and a lot of beef.
I'm getting so hungry right now. I can't even tell
I know, me too.
you.
Now I want some like Halim and naan and oh yeah. That's the comforting stuff.
Up after the break, Subba talks about what it was like to start celebrating Christmas for the first time as an adult. This is American Muslim Project. Welcome back to American Muslim Project. My guest today is Chef Sabawaheed Duffy. Saba prides herself on her ability to adapt in any environment, but she says the place where she feels most at ease is in the kitchen. She talks about how she got started.
You know, one thing, and it's so funny because like my dad feels like I'm totally like tearing into him right now because I have been doing a lot of media interviews and, you know, everybody's like, how did you get started? So I honestly, I mean, this was, I wish I had been able to pursue this career at a younger age. But when I was in high school looking to apply to colleges, at that point, I wanted to go to culinary school and my dad would not let me go.
Oh, wow.
And that was like, you know, obviously, he says he never said that to me. And I obviously believe that I like, well, I have no reason to make this up. And if he had said yes, I would have gone to culinary school. My path, my life would have taken a very different path. So,
but why didn't he want you to?
Well, because it's, you know, becoming a chef in 1998 for a woman, when a Pakistani girl, was not an acceptable career choice, and he was not going to encourage it. And he said he wanted me to get my bachelor's degree, just, you know, he was willing to financially support that. And whatever I wanted to do, I could do after that. It just took me longer to accomplish my goals.
Sure.
That, you know, so yeah. And when I was 18, it was, I was told, no, this is not the career you should be pursuing. Got my bachelor's, went to New York, started working in catering. And that's when I realized that this was my passion. And that's when I attended the French Culinary Institute and sort of started my professional culinary career at that point.
What do your parents say now about it?
So this is also very funny because like, I still have not heard them say the words, I'm proud of you, but they just don't, like, you could win the Pulitzer Prize. They just won't say those words. And he just, you know, because I said it in an article like last week and he read it and he's like, is she attacking me? And he read the article and he still hasn't said it. So I guess it's just not happening. I should not expect that to happen. But I mean, yeah, they're obviously proud. They're happy that, you know, I am pursuing my passion and I can pay my bills and have, you know, like raise my family and it's all good. But it's just funny because it's not a doctor or a lawyer or,
sure,
you know, what South Asian parents expect or what their idea of success means is something different. So, but I'm trying to change that. I'm definitely trying to change the status quo. And I want people to pursue their passions and their dreams and their goals. And especially like now I'm raising a daughter and I want her to know that she can pursue whatever career that she wants to, as long as she's passionate about it and she follows it through and she does it well. You know,
right,
that's all you can ask. So that, I think that's a big message that I always want to reiterate, is just, you know, be true to yourself and follow your dreams and goals. And eventually, you know, you put that positive energy out there and it should return in some way, shape, or form.
I mean, that great message for everybody listening, for sure. Can you tell us more about your time in the Middle East? Why did you decide to go live there for, I think you were there for 4 years?
I was there for 4 years, yeah. So it was in 2009, basically. I was going through you know, transition and kind of reevaluation of life. And I had just gotten over heart surgery as well. And at that point, you know, I had this like epiphany, like I really decided I needed to pursue my passion and my goals, and food was a big part of it. So I had also always been fascinated with life abroad. I, you know, traveled quite a bit, but I hadn't actually lived and worked abroad. And I thought Dubai would be a wonderful place to explore this culinary passion of mine, because it's still quite a young city and there's still a lot of potential for growth. And I was also fascinated with the media side. And at this point, 2009, cooking shows are on fire. It's like the yeah. hottest thing to be in a cooking show or some sort of like culinary related media. So at that point, I had this brilliant idea to bridge the gap between my Eastern roots and my Western upbringing, and to create this pilot, which actually you were very helpful in
yeah, I forgot about that until recently. Yeah.
Yeah. Which you were very helpful in when I was trying to shoot this at my parents' house. And at that point, I still didn't know much about media, but I created this very silly pilot TV show concept, which no one is allowed to see. It's so embarrassing. But it got me a job. So I sent that pilot concept over to Dubai One. I had someone had connected me with a producer there, and they saw it and they liked what they saw. And then I went there for a screen test. And a couple months later, I was offered a position as a TV, they call it TV presenter, but, you know, TV host. It's a different terminology there. And I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, in the span of a year, story, right?
In the span of a year, that happened. So that was my first introduction to media, living abroad, being away from America. So,
wow, all at once.
All at once, yeah.
Dubai, I feel like Dubai is known for its food, right? I feel like because there's so many international people that are there, is that right? Is there a big foodie scene there?
There is, actually. I was quite shocked when I went there because there was everything. I mean, there's a lot of ethnic foods, obviously, with influences from Pakistan, India, Bangladeshi type of cuisine, because there's so much influence from the subcontinent, and Iranian cuisine, all, you know, Middle Eastern types of cuisine were there. But with the way that the social scene in Dubai is set up is really focused a lot around, or the high-end social scene, I should say, is focused around European culture. So they're bringing in Michelin star chefs from all over Europe to come and open restaurants in Dubai. So, you know, not only do you have the ethnic foods, and now you have all these high-end Michelin star chefs that have also set up shop there. So quite interesting to see the range of food that they offered. But one thing that I did find that was lacking was good middle ground. You know, it was difficult to just go out for a casual meal midweek. You had to either go to the super high-end places or lower-end ethnic places. And there wasn't really anything good in the middle, which was frustrating because, like, you can't go and drop, you know, $200 on dinner every night of the week.
Yeah.
But you want something a little bit more upscale than, you know, just eating in like a dhaba kind of place. Yeah. So that was at that time. That was like 2010 to 2014. There has been a huge growth in that middle up, like casual upscale style restaurant in the last 5 years, which I've seen through, you know, social media and my contacts out there.
And I feel like similarly in the States in the last, whatever, 10 years or so, there's been a big foodie movement here. I'm not a foodie at all. But it seems like with the rise of Instagram, more and more people are posting their pictures, and this movement is really taking shape. How would you describe what's going on here in the States?
Oh, absolutely. I think, again, we can thank not just social media, but, like, you know, just all the food focused TV shows out there, all the top chefs and master chefs and iron chefs out there. It's really driven this culinary culture. And it's wonderful for everyone, because before, you know, you live in suburban America and you're limited to like Cheesecake Factories and Olive Gardens. But now in suburbia, you can even find good quality food because people understand and appreciate it now. Right. And they understand the value of scratch restaurants and people actually, you know, opening small businesses that are original concepts, because that's, I mean, I won't ever step foot in a chain restaurant. I just won't. I won't do it. I can't. I can't.
I think
But
I'm the exact opposite, but yeah, no, I totally agree.
I mean, I mean, there's, a certain sense of comfort in going to a Cheesecake
Sure.
Factory, of course. You know what you're going to get. But I, value the artisan chef experience and original concepts. And I aspire to that. That's what I do hope for myself someday.
Of course, yeah. What's next for you?
Right now I'm in a very comfortable place, and I love what I do. I'm working as a culinary educator and chef for Yale Appliance here. Of course, I do have a dream to have a restaurant, and there's a lot of factors that go into it. And if that was to happen, I'd have to have all of those lined up
Yeah,
perfectly
sure.
to execute it. But I'm in a good place right now, and then I have a baby, a little 16-month-old who is very active. She does
I
take up a lot of time,
can
so
imagine.
yeah. So she's definitely she's a handful, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But yeah, I just I don't want to go into anything and I feel like I'm neglecting her either. So
Sure.
I feel like, yeah, that's it's something I'm aspiring to, but it has to be the right time.
Yeah, of course. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
One question that I like to ask people is, do you have a uniquely American Muslim experience that you want to share?
That's a really good question, because I feel like I can't really pinpoint one. I feel like because of the where I grew up in, which is a pretty diverse town in Massachusetts, which is actually now technically a city.
It just became a city, right? Framingham.
Yeah, Framingham did become a city, and I moved back here recently. So, from having a pretty diverse surrounding, I don't think I had anything super unique happen to me. But I have to say, it was always difficult, sort of relating to classmates when I was young, because coming, from a first generation family, it was hard to understand what other kids in the class were sharing when you couldn't partake in that. I mean, this is like, elementary school. It was years ago. So I can't say that, like, that really impacted me now, present day. But it's funny because I guess, Christmas was always such a huge thing for everyone growing up, but I could never really relate to it. I didn't really understand the importance of it, and it was just kind of another thing. And now, being married to an Irish Catholic man, I'm learning how important these holidays are. And it's not from a religious aspect at all. It's just about sort of the magic of the holiday season and sharing in that, and making sure he's really interested in giving our daughter that same magical experience. And this is something I'm transitioning to now as an adult, like now starting to learn, oh, this is what you do for Christmas. Interesting. Like, I never grew up with it, never had a Christmas tree growing up, never really. I mean, we it's not that we didn't give gifts to each other. We just Our family just gave us gifts like throughout the year. And this is like, now you have to give all the gifts on this one day of the year. And that concept is still like very new to me. So I'm getting used to that part of life, which is fresh and new.
Yeah, so I mean, I relate 100%. My wife for the last 5 years, I've been celebrating Christmas with her. It's a very important holiday for her and her family. And again, not in the religious sense, like what you're saying, but every year I feel like I'm picking up a new, I don't know, tradition around Christmas. This year, I chopped down my first tree and brought it into the
Oh,
house.
that's a big
I was like, yeah,
one. Yep.
it's definitely exciting. And similarly, Erica, my wife, has been really great about doing Eid and Ramadan things, and it's really great to kind of merge these traditions and these holidays, and it's fun, you know?
Yeah, it's a melding of cultures and traditions. And yeah, there's no reason why. I mean, Christmas is so far removed from being a religious holiday. Yes, there's people that still go to mass. And actually, a few Christmases ago, we were in Ireland with my in-laws, and I did go to the mass, and I actually thought it was quite beautiful. You know, but that aside, it's just a really beautiful time to celebrate with family and to be with one another. And that part of it, I do respect and I enjoy. So it's just, yeah, something that's obviously going to be part of our lives in the future. And I love it. I love it. I love embracing and accepting other cultures and other traditions and creating our own unique experience.
Yeah. Saba, thanks so much for joining American Muslim Project. This was a really great conversation. And thanks for sharing.
Oh my God, my pleasure. I'm so glad I was able to speak with you. This is great.
My conversation with Saba was recorded in May of 2021. You can find out more about her on her website, sabawahid.com, or you can follow her on Facebook. She also has a blog called Culinary Delights. We'll have links to that and everything else that we talked about in the show notes. American Muslim Project is a production of Rebellion Media. Today's show was produced and edited by Mark Anato, Lindsay Gamble, and me, Assad Butt. Simon Hutchinson did our theme. You can find out more at AmericanMuslimProject.com.